The Richmond Theatre Critics Circle.
Curtain Call.
A discussion of all things theatre with Richmond critics and occasional guests.
Welcome to Curtain Call, Act 3, Scene 7. I'm Jerry Williams from RichmondMagazine.com.
I'm Claire Boswell from Style Weekly.
And we are going to talk about Mary Poppins, that is playing at Virginia Rep's November Theater through December 14th. I think pretty much everybody knows the story of Mary Poppins. There are a few extra scenes that were not in the Disney movie that came from the books. What'd you think, Claire?
This is probably one of my favorite shows that I've seen recently.
Really?
I was not expecting it to be. I went in thinking, oh, it's Mary Poppins. There's no way they're going to be able to make this anywhere near as magical as the Disney film was for me when I was a kid.
Right.
But I was wrong. This was a very magical production, I think.
Really? It's interesting because that's one of the exact words I used to say that didn't have the magic. I just felt like it just didn't have that charm. I thought Stacey Sabai was prim and purse. She was strict like Mary Poppins, but I never felt she had that sparkle.
I think she had the sparkle. I thought she was warm and inviting, and especially compared to all of the other nannies that we got to meet in this production, she was definitely the one I'd pick.
For me, the standout in the show was Morgan Reynolds, who played Bert, who's mostly known as the chimney sweep. I thought he was just full of life and joy, and he brought a little wink of mischief to the role.
I think he was a part of the magic. I felt like Mary Poppins got the sort of the magic, and Bert got the stage magic, you know? He got to sort of direct things that were happening on stage in a way that I thought was really fun.
I thought the rest of the cast was okay. Nobody was a real standout to me. Deb Wagner did some nice things with her several roles, as she always does.
Yes.
And why don't we segue into the director a little bit? Chase Niffin, his last show before he goes off to college. I thought, as usual, it had lots of energy, like he always does. But again, I didn't feel like it had a cohesive style, and it didn't feel very warm to me.
I disagree. I think part of what I thought made everything so cohesive wasn't so much about the directing as the stage design. Like, the set design was...
I hated the set.
Oh, I loved it. It was so Art Nouveau.
That house?
The house looked like a house.
Yeah,
but
with some wrinkled wallpaper, I might add.
I did actually kind of notice some of the wallpaper was a little off, but that didn't bother me that much. I thought there was a lot of character to the house. I thought it was kind of cool how we got to see different spaces of the house with, you know, bits that would come in from the ceiling or from the sides. But what I loved the most was that sort of Art Nouveau frame that they had around everything. And when we were in the park, those sort of like fluid looking watercolor trees.
Oh, and I
loved them. I thought that was so great.
I thought that was so pedestrian and didn't have any life or snap to it. And I felt those two numbers too, the two numbers that were not in the original movie, I thought both of those were just weird.
Oh, I loved them both. Jerry, we're like on opposite ends of the spectrum.
Now, I will have to say one of my complaints, and maybe you'll agree with me on this, one of my complaints very often in that space, and eventually maybe they will fix it, was the sound mix. John Wynn's orchestra was great, but I felt like a lot of the time you couldn't hear what was being said or sung, and we were in good seats.
I will agree that that was a problem for me earlier in the show. I do think maybe this is something that they corrected over the course of the show that I saw, which was Friday opening night. But I was sitting pretty close to the stage, and you know, the last time I saw a show there, I was sitting a bit further back, and I didn't notice any sound problems. And I wonder if it was just because of my like proximity to the orchestra.
I noticed that we could actually see the one of the horns, and his stuff was coming right at us. So that could be part of it. It's just where you sit in the theater, too.
Yeah, I think that is definitely a part of it.
I guess we'll just have to say on this one that even though I thought it was full of energy, it didn't work magic for me. And in your case, you loved it.
I loved it. I thought the magic was one of my favorite parts. It's very magical. Everyone should go see it.
We've just been talking about Mary Poppins, which is playing at Virginia Rep through December 18th. Now, Rich is joining me. Say hello, Rich.
Hello, this is Rich Grissett with Style Weekly.
And we are going to talk about The Santaland Diaries and Season's Greetings, which are playing at Richmond Triangle Players through December 16th. These are two one-acts that were taken from David Sedaris' book about the Christmas holidays. And actually, they show in reverse order. Season's Greetings comes first, which is with Jacqueline Jones, and then The Santaland Diaries comes second, which is with Robert Throckmorton. So what'd you think? Why don't we start with Santaland Diaries, since it's basically two one-acts with one person in each one. What'd you think about Santaland Diaries?
I liked it. Robert Throckmorton is a veteran of the stage. stage here in Richmond, and I thought he was very funny.
Flawless timing.
He did have a moment where he kind of lost his place on opening night, but, you know, opening night...
That happens. Sure, you know, I wasn't going to mention it because it just happens, but whatever.
Well, I think it's important, right? If we were in New York City, I don't know why we would treat it different than anywhere else, if we're being critical. But otherwise, no, I thought he gave a great performance. One of the things that I agree with you in your review, Jerry, is that some of the humor, I don't want to say it's dated necessarily, but it doesn't come off with the same spark that it perhaps once did.
I remember hearing the David Sedaris reading the book, whatever, 15, 20 years ago when he first did it, and it was hilarious and outrageous, and seeing it back again was like, oh, it's amusing.
It's amusing, but it doesn't achieve full hilarity. I wouldn't say that's a fault of the production as much as...
As the script.
I mean, humor ages. This was funny, but not over-the-top funny.
Right.
What did you think?
I pretty much agree with you wholeheartedly. Excellent timing. He was doing the best job he could with the offhand delivery that he had. It just didn't quite snap the way it probably did 15 years ago.
But I'd still say it was worth seeing.
Oh, absolutely.
I thought it was very good.
Yeah. As for Jackie Jones in Season's Greetings, I thought she did a lovely job too. She plays a housewife who's basically dictating her Christmas letter, and it gets darker and darker as she gets deeper into the letter. And I thought she did a lovely job of being very comfortable and chatting with the audience and was very sweet. But again, it's not that funny. It's just kind of interesting.
I agree completely. And this one, I think, feels a little bit more dated. Something that you and I both mentioned in our reviews is that, you know, she has now a stepdaughter who's Vietnamese.
Right.
And so...
It was a lot more unusual back 20 years ago.
Well, that and, you know, I think it does date it. It's not as funny as it perhaps once was, and something that people tend to shy away from now. I agree with you. I thought Jackie Jones was good in the role. She has that natural sweetness about her on stage, as always.
I think that was the thing that made that slight racism more workable, because she was so sweet about it.
Exactly. And, you know, it's the racism of the character.
Right.
You know. And that definitely comes across. It's something that you are in on.
The playwright is not approving of this. He's just giving an entree into that world.
I thought both of them had excellent timing. I thought they were both very funny. Again, not the level of hilarity that perhaps we expected, but still very good.
I agree. So it's worth seeing if you want to kind of have something a little different and sassy for Christmas instead of the traditional Christmas Carol kind of thing.
It's just a sugar rush when you go to the movies, when you go to the theater, or turn on the TV. Anything related to Christmas is just so sappy. And
This ain't.
If you're like me, you're a little done with that kind of thing. This is a dark holiday tale for you.
All right. We've been talking about The Santa Land Diaries and Season's Greetings, which are both playing at Richmond Triangle Players through December 16th. I'm here with George Boyd, who was in Richmond about two or three seasons ago to direct High at Richmond Triangle Players, and he's back in town to direct a show at Firehouse called Mary C. Brown and the Hollywood Sign. Welcome back, George.
Thank you.
So tell me, that's an interesting and unusual title. What's the deal behind that?
Well, in the late 60s, early 70s, Dorrie Previn was writing and recording a bunch of albums of her own. And one was a concept album that she wrote called Mary C. Brown and the Hollywood Sign. It was based on a true story, an article that she saw in a newspaper in L.A. one day about a young starlet who came to Hollywood and didn't make it.
As so many don't.
And she climbed to the top of the Hollywood Sign and jumped off and committed suicide.
Uh-huh.
The irony was that she got more press from her suicide in the L.A. Times and the Hollywood Reporter and the Daily Variety than she did in her whole career.
So what prompted you to get involved in creating a production out of this?
I've always been in love with this album. And over the years, Dorrie went back and wrote a bunch of other songs and then wrote a musical based on her stories and the experience of the newspaper article. And I had the privilege of getting to meet her in 1983, and we were fast friends for about 30 years. And I spent a lot of that time trying to talk her into giving me the rights to do the show. And I think I finally wore her down, and she said yes. And in the meantime, I've been spending more and more time in Richmond and getting to know Joel Basson.
The artistic director, right?
And played in the album, and he loved it, and he's been very supportive for about over a year now to get this on.
So is this a world premiere?
I guess it would be, yes, sir.
Well, speaking of the show, tell me a little bit about how you're mounting this. Is it going to be a big Hollywood sign on the stage?
Probably not. It's probably going to be, have a lot left to the audience's imagination. We've got a wonderful cast. Jessie Johnson is playing Mary C. herself.
She's always terrific, and she doesn't get enough chance to do lead roles, so I'll be excited to see her in this.
Yes, me too. Kelsey Cordry is our other main female singer, and then Dan Simo.
Talented young man, hasn't been in a show lately. So
right, so he's coming back with a fury. He's in three shows coming up in Richmond. And then there's Duke Meteor, who is the macho movie star on the set. And that's going to be played by Stevie Rice. And then in a big change of physicality, the tallest man on the stage, Matt Paulson, is going to play a 10-year-old boy.
Well, you've got a great cast, and they're two others?
Yes, Emily Skidmore. She's a local singer and has a band, so she and her band are going to participate. And I'm hoping that Nicole Foray-O is going to be our choreographer and third tap dancer like she was in our workshop. I have a fantastic musical director. His name is Matthew Poole. He's been out on a couple of national tours recently. So musically, everybody's really thrilled about working with Matthew Poole.
Well, it sounds like an intriguing project. I have been talking to George Boyd, who is directing Mary C. Brown and the Hollywood Sign at Firehouse Theater. It opens on December 8th and runs through December 16th. Thank you very much, George.
Thank you.
And that'll do it for this week's Curtain Call. We want to thank Open Source RVA for hosting us on WRIR, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with more reviews.
For extended podcasts and complete reviews, visit the Richmond Theater Critics Circle website at artsies.org.